It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Yeagy, and I'm so glad you're here. And today we have a really interesting conversation with an old friend of mine who I met a few years ago at a conference that I was at. And he and his partner were doing at the time some multifamily development and projects, and really interesting stuff that these guys do. And they've been together for 13 years. The gentleman I'm speaking with today is the co-founder and partner of Greenleaf Capital Partners. He's got over 20 years in real estate, has done over 50 investments, tons and tons of different projects. He's getting into other things besides multifamily, but I can tell you all kinds of great stuff about him. Why don't I just let you hear what he has to say, and we'll have a little conversation. Please, let's welcome Dave Kodrea. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thank you very much for having me on the show. I'm excited to talk and see what we kind of get into here. It's always a good conversation.
Yeah, man. So you're a Southeastern U.S.-based developer, project guy. You know, you put things together as far as investments go, and you do a good amount of projects. I think you told me before we got on, like 12 to 15 projects a year. So that's some serious deal flow. So let's start talking about some of that. I know you went from multifamily into other things as well. How did that evolution start with you? How'd you meet your partner? How'd you guys decide to start with multifamily? And now where are you? Big question.
I started in single family and eventually kind of worked my way into multifamily. I'm like, wow, there's more doors in one place. It's got to be at least a little bit easier. And from there, just continued. But I think, you know, when I'm looking at like what asset classes or what to do, it's really divided between like physical value add opportunities and operational value add opportunities. And we've been lucky enough that my partner and I, we figure it out, and we can do both of those. So we like both kinds of challenges. And lately we've been doing a lot more. We did multifamily, we did mobile homes, we did single family homes, we did student housing, and we're now working mostly in the flex industrial space and a good amount of medical build out. So that's been a fun spot, but it's also a great area where there's physical value add opportunities and a lot of assets that are owned by individuals long term, and there's operational improvements that can be put in. As silly as it sounds, like having good financial statements and getting real leases that are written properly, is there's still value to be made in real estate doing that.
Amazing. I wouldn't have thought that somebody would get that granular in describing how they have an edge. So that brings me to the question that I've been popping in my head here as we talk. And that is, what is your edge? Because, you know, a lot of people are out there doing, you know, the same, let's call it multifamily deals, right? They go out there, they take a Class C property, they get a contract to fix it up, right? They fix it up and they do a cash out refinance, and either they sell the project or you just hold it for cash flow. So everybody's doing that, and all the cool kids want to do that. So how do you actually make money in that part? Or if you've kind of pivoted to something else, what's your edge?
Yeah, I think the edge comes from actually operating the assets that you have.
Okay.
So we are very much focused on the minute details of extracting value from a piece of real estate. And it's not only just extracting value. You can't just like pull money out, but you have to add things to that piece of property so that it provides you with the opportunity to pull value out. And everything we're looking at is like, how do we just make operating and executing a business strategy on a piece of real estate more efficient? So a lot of that comes from deploying technology. I mean, real estate's been around for a super long time, so there's a lot of operational improvements that can come from just utilizing technology.
And have you got an example of some way that you've done that?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, if you should look from 20 years ago until now, just the idea of like, hey, we're going to do a background check on a resident that's going to move into a multifamily or a company. Like, how do I figure out what that company's financials are? That data is so readily available now. And it's also available in that there's software you can use to help predetermine your decision. So you load in the criteria that you want, and it's screening everything automatically for you, automatically telling your team whether this is a yes or a no. And something as simple as that removes that essentially like responsibility and function from a team member, they no longer have to do any of that stuff. Hmm. It's all driven by software and stuff that you've put in place. And now they can work on bigger and better problems. So technology is certainly like eliminating a lot of the mundane functions that no one, I don't think anyone was really super excited about trying to run a credit check at some point. No one was like, man, I miss doing that. That was fun. So that stuff kind of all sucked. And now you don't really have to do very much of that. But as simple as like routing maintenance requests, or how do we go through like tenant build outs when we're looking at space, that can all be done with technology and able to show the tenant. And really you're trying to create value for that prospective business. If you've got a warehouse space or prospective tenant of like, hey, I'm going to make your life easier if you do business with me. The easier you make their life, the more likely they're going to do business with you and the more value it creates for you. So,
boy, that sounds like business 101 right there, but it's so uncommon these days to hear anybody speak with business 101 acumen, you know?
Yeah. It kind of just boils down to like keeping it simple, but yeah. The easier we can make it for them to do business with us, the more likely they will.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And so now you're doing some flex space. You do some other kinds of projects. Tell us a little bit about how you can, I'd like to know what's the difference in cap rates, the difference in returns between, you know, some of the traditional multi-level family stuff, like on average. I know you don't have to get specific, projects.
Yeah. If we look at it high level, most of what I would, so started by multifamily, that's Class C or affordable housing. That's typically one and two story buildings with exterior entrances. So for the most part, you've got maybe a 12 or 20 unit building. You've got a bunch of those in a garden style complex. So you've got a 20,000 square foot, two story building. That's brick on the outside. Most of what we're buying in all of our assets are the same thing. There's just a different tenant or a different build out on the inside. So the reality is we buy different types of assets, but they're all really the same building. Talking a brick building that's maybe 20,000 square feet, that's also 20 feet high. Like if we find those, that's what we can buy. We can put anything in there from a flex tenant to, we could build it out to a dental office. We could build it, you could turn it into apartments. But that space is, it's also a space that's a little less competitive because there's not as many like institutional players looking for that size of a deal. And it's kind of hard for just one person to go buy one of those and know what they're doing.
Right.
So we kind of have that spot right there and that we've done pretty well in, and we're operating all of it. So it's all in the Southeast. It's all attainable that we can get to. But yeah, cap rates, a lot of stuff we joke around, we try and buy stuff at like a zero cap rate. We want to buy stuff that's like defunct, but there's not a lot of defunct stuff left anymore. But in the flex space, we can buy stuff at an eight and a half cap rate with vacancy, with operational issues that give us a year or so, we can own it for over a 10 cap.
Wow.
So on our acquisition. So that's our goal on most of them. Now we got to look at thousands of deals in a year to be able to buy 12. So
you got
to go through a ton of deals to be able to find what works. And we have a very narrow focus to even start with.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. How is, and we talk a lot about macro on the show as well. So how is the interest rate environment affecting you, your cap rates, your business deals, your deal flow, the quantity actually too?
So in the short term, we haven't seen a whole lot of pricing change on the types of assets that I'm normally buying. Now it's certainly like Class A apartments, that's seen some contraction of pricing out of the gates, and certainly like, big office parks, that's, they've got interest rate issues and they've got demand issues there as well. So value's kind of coming down on those two fronts, but the smaller stuff that we play in, we haven't seen a whole lot of value change yet. I certainly think that's going to come as loans mature and people have to either refinance or reset their interest rates at, 6, 7, 8%. Now that's totally different than 3% that it's been for the past like forever. Essentially, it seems like forever that the rates have just been going lower and lower.
But, interestingly enough, I look at it on the other side as an investment and I say, well, interest rates have gone up, which also means that yields have gone up for fixed income investments, right? So now you've got a competitor in there that you didn't have before, and that's the general fixed rate interest rate investment market. And so you've got to either be really good at operating your projects so that you can compete with those interest rate investments. Yeah. Does that play a role in here?
Oh, certainly. Like 2 years ago, say you're getting a 5% yield on a real estate investment, but the risk-free rate or a savings account is like 0.5%.
0.5%. Yeah.
You know, so you're out of the gates doing 10 times better than the risk-free rate, but now the risk-free rate's 4%. So doing 10 times better than that is pretty challenging. So that's, I don't know if it's going to get back to that big of a, if it gets back to that big of a spread there, but even if we can get, if we can get to 10%, that's still 2.5 times better than 4%, but it's not 10 times as good. That's for sure. So, but rates going up too, it helps us. We don't use a lot of debt overall. I mean, we obviously have debt, but we're trying to be around, 50% debt. But also all of our reserves are now earning money, which is awesome.
Well, that's before true they too, never, right?
Before they never earned anything. And now we're doing pretty well on the cash flow that we just get from having our reserves. And with our, with larger deposits, we get a little bit better rates from banks and money market accounts and yields that we've got stuff in. So that's helpful on that front.
It seems to me, and you're the expert in real estate, but it seems to me like there's going to be a reshuffling. Hey, it's Mark Yeager here to tell you about our cash flow machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2-4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2-4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more. It seems to me, and you're the expert in real estate, but it seems to me like there's going to be a reshuffling. And I know I'm down in Florida, you're in the Southeast in Atlanta. And I think in those two markets, we don't have anything really right now to worry about. We still have lots of business and lots of prospects. But I think there are pockets of this country where there are actually recessionary forces at play. And I think, eventually we're going to fall into that at some point as well. It always happens. So, where do you see it happening first? Do you see it happening in the residential market? Do you see it happening in commercial markets? Do you see it happening at all? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see it happening in people for the most part. A lot of people are making decisions based on how much can they finance and what is that payment?
Yeah.
And it doesn't even matter how big that deal gets. You can have a $50 million deal. It really all hinges on like, how big is your payment and can you make it or not?
Right.
But as soon as those interest rates reset, it's in your payment doubles or triples, it probably doesn't work anymore. And you've got to decide, hey, am I going to double down on my equity in this deal to have a lower debt and a lower payment? Or am I just going to have no cash flow going forwards? Either one of those scenarios is hard to say, like, I'm excited about this investment. I'm now going to keep this.
Yeah.
So you're probably like, look, I'm going to get out of this thing. And you might not even be able to get out of it above water. Because someone else buying, it's going to get debt too. We look at our portfolio, we've got a lot of fixed debt that's at 2.8%, 3%. It's like, that's great now, but like, wait a minute, what about 5 years from now? Is that, some of them don't expire our loans until like 2027, but what if rates are 5-6% then?
Yeah.
It's like my payment is going to go up a lot and that's going to significantly hurt the cash flow.
Yeah.
So I think whatever loans come up first are going to be, they're going to be hurting right now if they come up in the next 6 months.
And how does somebody that's a good operator weather that? Because if it's happening to everyone, there's going to be a deflationary effect on the prices of real estate, right? Because you're not going to want to refinance at a higher interest rate to run a break-even project. So your project's going to be worth less to somebody new buying it. So there's going to be some kind of a repricing. How do you stand above the crowd to do that?
I think when you look at kind of who the syndicator is or who the person putting the deal together. They have a long-term outlook on stuff. Typically, they're going to have less debt. Right? If you have a shorter-term outlook, you're like, hey, I'll just take as much debt as I can, put in as little capital. I'm going to turn this thing and then I'm going to sell it in 12 months or 18 months. And that's kind of where that rapid transaction pace, as soon as the rapid transaction pace slows down in any market, it doesn't have to be real estate, it could be any market.
Exactly. Yeah.
As soon as your, you know, transaction pace goes down, you have some serious issues with volume.
You know, yeah.
It can't happen and your values go down. So that's going to definitely happen in real estate as well. I think to weather that, if you had a, it's kind of too late once you're already right now. You can't really, the rates are already higher, but if you had a longer term outlook, you have cash and you didn't take out too much debt, but it's kind of a little late in the game to say that.
Yeah.
It is. Our, as a portfolio, our debt to value is around 44%, 43%, which is pretty low for real estate as a whole.
Sure.
And some are like, hey, maybe you should have more debt. It's like, well, I don't know if you can weather the storm if you have more debt. You know. So I think a good long-term operator's got a conservative debt position. They have strong reserves and they're ensuring that they're getting cash flow out of their deals all the time. Even with swings, they've still got to get cash flow.
And as we kind of wrap up here a little bit, do you have a sense of where you think interest rates are going?
I thought in 2016, I was like, there's no way they can go lower than what they are now. And they kept going lower and lower and lower. But, you know, it sounds like we're going to have a prolonged period where they're pretty high or at least much higher than we're accustomed to at 2% and 3%, which just seems crazy low. So
yeah, historically low it was. And, you know, I think we're getting to the area where we're back into the normal range, but I don't know how that's going to affect the world. I believe we're going to have some systemic inflation that's here to stay. I think the Fed's kind of in the corner where, you know, these banks, they're starting to fail. They're having to bail them out. That's inflationary. They're going to print more money. That's inflationary. But at the same time, on the other side of the mouth, they're saying we're going to raise rates. So who knows where it's going to end up?
Yeah.
But all I know is that the more expensive that money is, the less it moves around, like you say. When it moves around less, then you get a deflationary effect. Who knows what that's going to mean? But we'll see.
Yeah. It's, you know, the banks, I think it's interesting. We deal with predominantly community banks. So like regional and community banks, those are the typical lenders that are doing any kind of, you know, smaller improvement type project in a local community. Like that's regional and community banks that do that stuff. And then that concern is just, are their deposits still there? Or are people taking their deposits out to go put them in treasuries or money market accounts or moving it somewhere else?
Just, you know, be safe. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is fascinating. Where can people find out a little bit more about what you do and maybe your syndications and your deals, things like that?
Yeah, best is our website, greenleafmgmt.com. I'm on LinkedIn as well. But our website, we have kind of all the deals that we post up and we have reviews of how they do. So sometimes, obviously, some are better than others. And we're trying to send out there like what worked, what didn't work, and what did we learn? And that's really, cool. You know, as an operator of this stuff, like that's the exciting part. I mean, you want to see problems as an operator. You want to get your hands dirty and see what's happening and figure out like, okay, what can I do? What can I learn here? What can we fix? So that part's fun. We try and share as much of that information as we can.
That's great. I think, you know what, that makes you different because I don't think everybody wants to get their hands dirty. They want a spreadsheet deal, right? Where they just the spreadsheet flows and they want the deal to work like that, but they're not willing to go there, get their hands dirty and figure out where the operational efficiencies are like you, it seems like. So that's great.
We've got a deal next week that we're tearing down like an old giant metal structure on a piece of property. We've got a couple of our team members going out, even our accounting team being like, what are we going to get to see today that happens? And it's pretty neat.
So that's great.
Seeing that start.
Little cross-functional training.
Yeah.
That's great. Cool.
They don't get to drive any of the heavy equipment, but we get to see it at least.
I was out on this, at this place called Cycle Ranch out in Texas yesterday. And my buddy is like, hey, you want to help me change out some bulbs? And I'm like, yeah, sure. That doesn't sound very tough, does it? But he got one of these boom lifts and it went 45 feet in the air. And in Texas, there was a lot of wind. So I was freaking out. I'm at the top of this thing and we're going back. I'm like, is this going to stand up while we pull these bulbs down, these 100-pound bulbs? Anyway, it was a trip. And I
you get in those things and like, hey, clip into the handrail on the thing that's up in the air. I'm like, What if the whole thing falls over?
That's what I thought was going to happen. I was like
a great, I'm slipped into this. The whole thing's going to go away. I couldn't do that. Those things are way too high for me. That's courageous getting up there.
Yeah, I did it once. Now I'm done. So anyway, it was fun.
You did enough. That's enough.
Listen, it was an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I love when I have real estate guys like you on it, because it kind of balances out the perspective that we have here, that, you know, there's still a lot of money to be made in real estate. There's still a lot of benefits to it. Certainly, we didn't even talk about all the tax benefits and the other benefits that there are to real estate. And it's an important part of everybody's portfolio. And I'm not a real estate guy mostly, but I believe that everybody should have some of that, some exposure. And certainly to deals and guys like you, I think makes it all worthwhile too.
Yeah, it was a pleasure talking to you, Mark. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you.
Don't climb up any light poles.
Yeah,
stay on the ground.
For those of you watching and listening, thanks for being here. And remember, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. See you next time, everybody. Take care.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.